Greetings in the name of Jesus, the head of the church, the one who loved us with great love. So great a love he has loved us with that we may never question again whether or not he loves us, because the evidence is all in. A few moments ago, Brother Tim said that we're going to be sitting under the sound of the word, and I almost winced because the message that I have tonight, if I have any apologies I feel like I ought to make, it doesn't feel like a very much of a Bible sermon. And the reason is because I want to preach on a subject that I think is relevant to the church, but it's a subject that is outside of the church. And so it's kind of hard to take the Bible and use it to point at a subject that's out there in the world. And if we are not careful, it will come into the church. Now, you're probably wondering what in the world I'm thinking about. I would like to preach this evening on a message that I was assigned last summer, and it was one that was stirring in my heart, but I never quite felt right bringing it into a worship service. But after I was assigned the message, I realized that it is a message that the church needs to hear. The message I would like to share is probably more for young people. I guess I thought of y'all first because you probably face it as much as anybody. But the title is The Dangers of Social Networking. Now, maybe you are a community of believers that have really looked closely at this subject, and you have set up a firewall that has kept that thing way out of there somewhere. And I'm going to have to explain point by point by point what in the world is no social networking. Maybe it's a term you never heard of. But it's a term that actually, when you look at what it is, it's been around at least since the Tower of Babel. And so that was not just yesterday, that goes back a little bit. But social networking really does have to do with technology, with internet, with smartphones, with things that old people look at young people and wonder why they do it and are too old for that kind of thing. And I find that the subject can be, audience can be kind of narrow. Not just because of the group we're talking to, but also because I find that as you cross-section people, when it comes to social networking, how to use it, who uses it, who doesn't use it, most people know where they're at on it. And there's a group of people out there that feel like it is a really, really bad thing, and anybody that does it is really, really bad. And there is a group of people that feel like we all ought to be able to somehow, as Christians who discipline our lives, we ought to discipline and then use it very selectively. And then there are also people that say there's nothing wrong with it, and the more we use it, the merrier. And that's exactly the same three groups you find if you just go out in the world. Now, social networking is a broad subject. I looked it up online in the Wikipedia encyclopedia, and the entry in there, I went to print it out, and it was 32 pages long. So I'm not going to read you that. I might pull a few things out of it, but that just gives you a little insight into how big the subject is. And there's a lot to talk about. Before we start looking at it, I do believe that our worship and our preaching should be Bible-based. And so what I'm going to do is I'll invite you to Romans chapter 15. I just want to look at some social networking that is taught here. It has nothing to do with the internet. Android and iPhones and Facebook and Twitter and MySpace are not even hinted at. But it is talking about a form of social networking here. And I just want to lay that down at the introduction as a scriptural something to compare it in your minds as I'm talking about it. I think this is talking about brotherhood. It's talking about congregational life. I would like to read the first seven verses. Romans 15, verse 1. We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to his, to edification. For even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproacheth thee fell on me. For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. Now the God of patience and consolation grant you to be like-minded, one toward another, according to Christ Jesus, that ye may with one mind and one mouth glorify God even the Lord, Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. Wherefore receive ye one another, as Christ also received us, to the glory of God. This is talking about Christian brotherhood, and Christian brotherhood is a network. It doesn't take a lot of understanding to understand that. It's a community, though, that we help each other, according to this teaching, rather than just helping ourselves, or first helping ourselves, or seeking to please ourselves. It is a network that focuses on the betterment of others. And it is calling us to copy Jesus. Verse 2 and 3, please each other, do it like Christ does. The Christian brotherhood copies Christ. Now here's a question for you to think about. Was Jesus a techie? If he would be here right now, would he have a smartphone? Would he use Twitter? How many followers would he have? How many hits would he get? Who would like him? Who would unlike him? It's kind of fascinating to put real life into Jesus' world, isn't it? I don't know how you ask those questions. What would he have said if he had one? Well, then let me ask you this question. Since we know he did not, and it wasn't even available back then, would Jesus have had a better ministry if he could have had these things? If Jesus would have chosen to come 2,000 years later, at least Almighty Sovereign God would have superintended that he comes in 2,000 instead of zero, could he have had a better ministry? If we say yes, then we're assuming that God got his timing a little bit messed up, because he didn't come in the fullness of time. If we say no, then we're talking about something that he could do without, and it didn't matter. And you start letting those things turn over in your mind, it gets kind of intriguing. The ministry of Jesus was not online, it was hands-on. And you just read through the Gospels. See, we're supposed to copy Christ. That's why I'm starting here. You do your ministry, you do your interaction, you do your networking like Christ, who pleased not himself. Copy him. Jesus went to the people, they came to him, but he didn't fax people, he didn't call them on the phone. Well, you say that technology wasn't there. I know it wasn't, but he didn't do it either. And anybody that could get the angels to sing for his baby announcement could do anything he wanted. And this is how he did it. So you just think about that. He did ministry face-to-face, he did social networking face-to-face, and he did have mass media options at his fingertips. Even though a lot of his followers wrote books and wrote down his stories, he did not. We have no writings that I know of exist on the face of the earth today that he so much as took a pen and wrote a letter. Maybe he did, and we don't have track of it. But it was just fascinating for me to think about Jesus and his ministry and how he did life as compared to the options we have today, and how we think we might be bettered, or how we think we might be worsened, depending on how we order our lives. This passage that I read to you does underscore one more point that we need to lift out, and that is that the ultimate purpose of our networking, the ultimate purpose of our brotherhood, is to glorify God. Verse 6, you do this networking, you do this brotherhood, that ye may with one mind and one mouth glorify God. Somehow, as we cover the subject of social networking tonight, we need to store a little piece of our memory back there and hang on to this thought that whether you eat or whether you drink or whether you text or type or visit, do all to the glory of God. That's our calling. And it has to be that way for it to be right. We can look over at 1 Corinthians 10:31, where the same thought is picked up by the Apostle Paul. Whether you eat or drink, do all to the glory of God. And that is in the context, again, of brotherhood and how you interact with people. Verse 32, give none offense, neither to the Jews nor the Gentiles, neither the church of God. Even as I please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Our church life has a very strong mandate. Glorify God with it. And whatever we're going to cover tonight However we're going to pick up this subject and look at it, we have to understand that no matter what we do with it, it is our intent to have it wrapped up and summarized that this is a way that we glorify God. And if it doesn't, drop it. Another question for you. Well, let's just go right into the subject. What is this social networking? A dictionary will tell you that it is the creation and maintenance of business and personal relationships online. So whatever we're doing, it's online. It's on the internet. It is, and the internet, I believe, is not inherently bad, but I have to tell you, it's not inherently good either. No, you don't know what inherent means. That would just have the idea is automatic or part of its qualities. It's not just, you can't say it's bad and you can't say it's good. It's something in between and it has to be sifted through. The dictionary also suggests that whatever we're talking about, it is believed to be relationships. It's the maintenance of personal and business relationships online. And that's very broad. So I went to this Wikipedia, which is basically an online encyclopedia. And what's intriguing about Wikipedia to me is that since it's online, you don't have to run a new whole run of encyclopedias every time you add more information to it. And like I said, it was 28 pages long, and it was too long and too technical for me to stand up here and read it. But I did sift through some pertinent data that I felt was worth lifting out as we talk about the dangers of social networking. First of all, this article makes the point that as of 2013, 70% of Americans use some form of social networking services. So that gives you an idea that if you line 10 men up, 7 of them are online with their relationships in some way. And again, there's many, many things, and we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. But another thing I learned from this article that I found intriguing in the 28 pages as I sifted through is that they tried to go through the subject and they listed positives and negatives, benefits and what they called concerns. And I also noted with interest that the list of benefits has 10 points and the list of concerns has 18. I guess they were biased writers. So what is this social networking that we're talking about? Well, it's a platform, and these are terms that might go over your head because you're not real familiar with internet technology and terminology, but it's a platform or an arrangement used to build social networks or social relations among people who have similar interests, activities, backgrounds, or real-life connections. Now the main one, it's as soon as you start talking about social media or social networking, you don't get too far into the subject till you have to talk about Facebook, because that's the biggest one, by a long shot, a great margin. According to this data, Facebook is recognized as the king of social networking. It was started as among a group of college students at Harvard University, and it was somebody's brainy idea of a way that they could stay in touch with each other in college and after they left there. But it wasn't long after it was in that one of the ones in the group by the name of Zuckerberg? I didn't write it down. It's Mark Z something. He suddenly realized that there is potential for this. If you could somehow push this platform or this concept into main population, the potential for growth would be incredible. And he dropped out of college, and he and another fellow began to do just that. And as that thing went public, the people that had helped start it became very upset about it. They tried to stop him because they wanted to keep their own little secret, their own little game. But these two men said, no, there's an opportunity here and we're going to push it. And today they are some of the wealthiest people in the world because it has taken the world over. Currently, there are 900 million active users. That's people who regularly read or contribute to Facebook sites. That is 3 times the population of the United States. So if you add everybody up in the world and take it times 3, you know how many active users are on Facebook right now. So it gives you a little idea of the size of social networking. Facebook right now has 2.1 billion participants. That means over time, 2.1 billion people have set up sites on Facebook, and that is about 1/3 of the population of the entire world. The next closest competitor in social networking to Facebook is Twitter. They have 300 million or 1/3 active users. Or Google Plus is 1/9, has 100 million. And they're built a lot on the same concept. They operate a lot the same. Twitter is different in the sense that you don't paste pictures. Well, you can attach pictures and videos to it, but it's known for its one sentence blurbs. I'm going to town. I'm going out to eat at TGI Fridays, and you tell everybody that's following you that you're headed to the restaurant, and then a little while later you hit it again and you show them a picture of what's on your plate, and they all check. Ooh, he's having ribs tonight. And then a little while later you say, here's what my bill costs, and you take a picture of it and you send out. Ooh, he ate a lot tonight, and all the followers know exactly where he's at. That's Twitter. Now, tonight, much of our focus is going to be on Facebook and Twitter, only because they are the two big ones, and everything else added together equals about those two. Now, having said that, those are the two big general ones of social networks that people use in the world today, but there's a whole host of specific networks, and this article in Wikipedia gave a running list that they're adding and taking away of over 150 different networks that you can be part of, and it's anything from LinkedIn for business professionals, Pinterest for Mennonite women to get some recipes from, and anything else, really. There's Caring Bridge, which is actually I found to be very, very helpful. Somebody is getting treatment for cancer, and there'll be a friend or a parent or a wife that is taking pictures and giving updates. And instead of you calling or waiting on the next email thread to come out, you just go on anytime you want. Oh, there's the latest. And that's Caring Bridge. It's a network. There's Menno Discuss for Mennonites. If you want to go in there, that's more of a blog, but in definition, it is a social network, and it's pretty much for anybody with the name Mennonite or somebody interested in Mennonites, and you can pretty much find any doctrine, any expression, any statement. It's used very much like your typical social network. The article said that social networking, you can divide up into three kinds of categories, and that is discussions about concepts or places. Number two is the friendship connection type. That's mostly what Facebook is. And this, it said, is defined by self-description pages. In other words, I will set up a site about me. That's Facebook. This is who I am. This is where I am. This is what I'm doing. And many times includes this is what I'm thinking about, too. Also, there are social networks like TripAdvisor or Yelp that are review or recommendation systems. In other words, I bought this KitchenAid mixer. It worked really good for 3 years, and then it died, and the main bearings went out. And you can look at that, and you can learn about KitchenAid mixers. But these are some of the different things that are out there. And tonight, our focus is on the dangers, or what might be questionable or objectionable about that. Now, social networking services makes it possible to connect people who share interests and activities across political, economic, and geographic borders. I told you that social networking goes back a very long time, and there's a sense in which the pushing forth of the idea of building that Tower of Babel and everybody to come together, united and interacting, that was a very weak form, but maybe the first expression that I could sort of see. People across the miles bonded together in a system for the same goal. And you could almost call that social networking. But basically, once you come up through history and you get into modern, I'll say just electric or forms of communication where we're no longer standing face to face, you begin to see this idea of social networking coming on. The party line started it, then you have the conference call lines. And today even, I actually have a number in my phone. You can call and you can just listen to an Amish man go over obituaries, and everybody's calling in, and then they start talking about this and they're catching up. And it's a social network is what it is. The budget is a social network. It's always been. The whole idea is people with a common interest. You know, I don't know. Stolzfus, King, Yoder, Sensnick, Weaver, they mull it, they sit down, they write a letter, they send it into Sugar Creek, they print it all up and send it out to everybody, and then you get it and you read it. And it's a social network. Now, this article said that with internet technology as a supplement to fulfill its needs, social networking is in turn, and I thought this was significant to find on Wikipedia, social networking is in turn affecting everyday life, including relationships in school, in church, in entertainment, and in family. It's just an observation. You see, what it's saying is that as these networks do their thing, they are affecting and changing school life, church life, entertainment life, and family life. And I find that to be true. You know, every 2 weeks the budget comes out, and there are some homes, it shouldn't be this way, but that night they get peanut butter sandwiches because mom has to read the budget. Okay? But guess what? You give that same person a Twitter account, and they don't even eat peanut butter jelly sandwiches all the time because that's what mom's doing. Okay? And all this internet medium has done is it has taken things that can be abused and thrown the door open for abuse way beyond what the old mediums could do. And this is what makes it dangerous in its own right. Internet has exploded social networking, and it has done weird things to society. I remember reading one book on this subject, and the writer was decrying what it has done just to social life. And he talked about going to a high school reunion, and he saw one of his best old friends from school across the room, and he waved to him, and the fellow waved to him, and they started working their way toward each other. And he said that gentleman stopped three times coming across the room to check his phone and to answer a message until he got there. From the first time he saw him till they met, he had talked with three other people on his phone. And you think about what that says about the relationship. That man realized that in that moment there were three other people more important than him just in the walk across the room. And this is what this article is talking about as you know, what's going on here. The other thing that happens with exploded social networking is that people now have the opportunity to spend a lot more time reading things that they would have never bothered to interest themselves in before. In other words, if it's readily available and you can get it from all over the world, you'll just spend a lot more time staring at it than if you had to go to the mailbox and pick it up, or farther than that. Now, this article makes one more point, and it's one I understand the least, and you almost have to understand how technology works. And I'm going to do the best I can with it. But social networking is a resource for advertising and marketing. So, what is this talking about? Well, social networks are set up with, Facebook is by far and away the most advanced in this, they will watch you as you watch it. And it's a little bit like this. I'm going to go back to the budget. Please forgive me if I'm wearing it out. But you know how the budget, you open it up and you got to go looking. I'm from Lebanon. You got to go looking for that article. It's not in alphabetical order. They rotate it around. But it's like if the budget would know that since I used to live in Lebanon County and I know Michael Horning, and he's a member in one of our churches, that I always read his article first. And they would figure that out. So when my budget comes to me, that would be the first one right up front. And they would know that since I have an uncle and aunt in Abbeville, South Carolina, and the people that I remember lived right across the road right in there, and sometimes my uncle and aunt are in there, and I usually read that one second, budget would figure that all out, and it would arrange the budget so that the people in Kelowna, Iowa, that I never heard of and I never read their article, it may not even show up on my budget. Now, when you do Facebooking, they're watching you all the time. And actually, a lot of the advertising that's done on the internet is doing that. All you need to do is buy a lawnmower at a certain place of business, and if you check the weather report on your smartphone app, an ad for that lawn care will come up, and they think you're checking the weather to see if you should mow lawn today. The only reason I know that is because I asked the owner how his ad comes up on the weather report, and he said, that's how we programmed it to do. We just assume that if people are checking the weather, maybe they want to mow their yard. And so we've arranged it so that the search engine knows to put our ad there when somebody looks it up. And you can do those things. And I don't have it all. I don't understand it all, but I know that it's being done. Social networking, number four, is largely individual driven. And I didn't make this point up. It's what Wikipedia observed. And this is what really sells it. You have to understand that in its raw definition, something like Facebook really, really sells because it is largely individual, personally driven. In other words, I build the network the way I want it. And this really appeals to people because I can decide who I want to be part of my network. Now, a lot of people on Facebook, the general attitude is that we want as many followers as we can get. But we do sort of like the idea that we can sift through them and we can kick the ones off we don't want. And it becomes a very efficient and pleasant way to try and build relationships. Only who I want in here gets in. And some are more open than others, but this is true, that it's largely individually driven. That's why I'm not on it. I don't want to be on, so I'm not. I get to decide. But if you have it, if I have it, I decide what I want to put on my page. I decide what I want on my blog. I project myself the way I want to, and people can comment below if I allow them to be part of it. And if I dismiss them because I want to, then I will. And I also get to review how many people like me. This is an odd system which massages the praises of others toward me. And the purpose of this dynamic I find to be fiercely central and wonderfully delightful. Wouldn't it be nice if after these meetings are all done, I'd have a blog and y'all would write in what you thought of the meetings? Can you imagine what that would do for me? That's what a lot of people are doing with Facebook. That's why they like it. I already know before we get done that whether you think I did a really good job or whether you wish I would never show up again, it's best if I don't think about that. It really is. But this is social networking is a design system so that I can be massaged by the praise of men. Matter of fact, I can be motivated to say things that I don't even mean so that they like it and like me back. And I'm talking about the dangers, and I'm just handpicking some things right now. Suppose that one of you mothers wrote a Christmas letter and sent it out to all your friends. Suppose there was a place where everybody could weigh in what they thought of your Christmas letter. That can get addicting. Ask anybody who's in it. They won't admit it, but it can be. And then you take that whole world and you set it back to what I was reading out of the scriptures. We then, that are strong to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves, let every one of us please our neighbor for his good. I guess that's telling us to like them. For even as Christ pleased not himself, but was written, the reproaches of them that reproached thee fell on me. We are here to serve the needs of others, not the others serve our needs. And any time we get that twisted, they will suffer and so will we. All right, let's just talk about some of the dangers. And again, I'm going to harvest it right out of these. A lot of these are things I've thought about already, and I was first surprised and then felt empowered to just simply pick up somebody else's observations and lay them down on paper for you to think about. Danger number one is the danger of lost privacy. This is one that a lot of people don't care about until they get burnt. And then they wonder how they could have been so foolish. But you see, any time that you take information and you send an email, you text a picture, you send something, you are releasing control of that information. And it's going out, a lot of it's going into what they call the cloud, and there's a lot about the cloud I don't understand. But ask anybody that has gotten burnt by this. But when you release something, it becomes available. And it's available to someone whom, if it goes to somebody that we wanted to get it, well, that's good. And if it gets available to somebody who is harvesting it for your demise, that's bad. And both happen. And we're talking about the dangers of this, that when you step out and you push your thoughts, your life, your world out into the public market, you can't control anymore where it goes. And some of that is fine, it's helpful, and some of it is disastrous. Pictures, voice recordings, and statements become free trade on the talk market. And there is many afflicted soul today who has faced the horror of this free trade. Ask a political candidate. A video or a voice recording of 10 years ago that suddenly shows up in the middle of your campaign. How in the world did it get there? I didn't even know anybody was around. I just sent it over to my friend. He used to be your friend. And there it is, and you cannot stop it. It hits Associated Press. There are married men who have fallen like trees. There are men who have lost their jobs, marriages destroyed, political campaigns hijacked. I came across a story from 2009, and it was a story that took place over in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Eagles had gotten rid of one of their more popular and expensive players, and a man was very upset about it. And he went on his Facebook page, and he lambasted the organization. He just railed against everybody he could rail on Sunday evening. And Monday morning, he went to work, and his boss was standing there meeting him at the door and said, "You're not allowed in here. You're fired." Unfortunately, he worked for the Philadelphia Eagles organization, and by the time he got to work the next morning, everybody in the office knew what he thought about what was done there. And he was sunk because he lost his privacy over Facebook. It's just a story. Now, what's dangerous about this is because you have to understand that if you look at the scriptural profile of who we are and how we're supposed to function, we are supposed to be servants, we are supposed to be diligent, we are supposed to be out there serving, but we also function with the reality of people that need a quiet corner. Jesus told his disciples, "Come apart and rest a while." And there was a reason for that in that moment. But the Bible teaches us to have our time of meditation. When you go into your closet to pray, a quiet corner. And we have a boundary in our own circle of existence whereby there are some things that for us just to exist as human, it stays inside. And when you have an untamed animal that will suck and draw your private world out into the public forum, that's dangerous. And there's just more ways that can destroy us than I can ever thread into a sermon tonight. But I just want you to think about that. Even Jesus himself had his moments when he went up into the mountain alone to pray. And there are things that took place on that mountainside that we will never know about because that was his private world. And it would have been a tragedy if somehow it got blown up on Facebook. Danger number two is the danger of hypocrisy. This is a common problem, and it comes right into the Mennonite church when people use things like social media. It's a commonly known problem that people will project themselves differently online than they do in real life. Actually, that's an old problem, not the online, but that we would write about ourselves different than what we would talk or do in real life. The Apostle Paul got accused of this. They said his letters are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak. And he said, "Wait till I come and visit you." But those people knew about the reality that a man can sit down with a parchment and a pen, and he can write something down that portrays or projects something different than what a person is in real life. And this has gotten infinitely worse when you can do it with your thumbs when you're driving down the road, or you're doing it in between projects, or you're doing it as you're crawling into bed, and people will make statements of criticism, contempt, crass praise, and then they will get exposed, and people's common response is, "Well, that's not me. That's just my online person." But that's not true. That is them. Whatsoever comes out of a man is what's on the inside. And many times people say things they shouldn't say things they didn't mean, or say things they can't or won't back up in real life. And they'll do it online because they think it might get a few more thumbs up before they fall asleep that night. And it's deceiving and addicting. But the scriptures say that we should avoid foolish talking, Ephesians 5:4. Not only does social networking tend to encourage us to display ourselves, it tends to push us into some odd addiction to see how far we can go before we get stopped. Number three is the danger of trolling or bullying. Now, trolling, when you go fishing, is to fish with a line. It basically is when you hang out the side of a boat with just your string and a hook, and you see the fish, and then you go, and you just gaff them and catch them. You're not really baiting them. You just watch them come by, and you hook them. And again, when you start talking about how social networks will prey and watch you, prey, P-R-E-Y, and watch you, what you do, what you look at, how you talk, and then they'll feed you with the ads and the support material that they think you want. That's trolling. But you, on the darker side, you can actually do that in your relationships too. You can watch people and you can set them up and hook them. And that's where bullying comes from. And it's a very advanced skill online. Probably the most shocking story that I found in my study was the story of Megan Myers on MySpace. I don't know if you ever heard it. It took place in 2007. Megan Myers was a 16-year-old girl that committed suicide, and she was in high school. And as they were examining her life and investigating, they discovered that she was being verbally and brutally harassed by a young fellow from school named Josh Evans. And as they studied into it deeper, they ran into something extremely shocking, and that was there was no Josh Evans. But rather, Josh Evans was somebody created by 11 other students as somebody that liked her. And they used this fictional person on MySpace to set this girl up and then tear her down. And it's just a horrible story of how bad the social network can go wrong. The article that I read said, thankfully, this is not a big problem. However, there is concern because it's a growing problem. And people are just learning how to do it. Set you up to take you down any way you want. And this is, I'm preaching on the dangers. I'm not talking about the blessings. If I would have said the blessings and dangers, then I'd have to say some things that I probably won't say tonight. I'm keeping it narrow. But this is what's out there. And as we invite this world into our own, this is what we're going to bump into. Not all the time, not every time, but some of the time. And you want to think about it and think about how it fits into the profile of relationships as the scriptures teach them. Number four, the danger of egoism and narcissism. Those are two big words I'll have to define. Egoism is the doctrine that the individual self-interest is the actual motive of all consideration. Narcissism is love for one's own body. And this is two definitions that have way too much self-focus in them. Self-projection occupies a very high percentage of social networking. And this article that I was reading, the Wikipedia says that the top 10 networks, and it listed them all, are particularly ranked with this problem of egoism and narcissism. It's just people using it to promote self and to talk about themselves. And what this is just some really big words for an old problem that caused an angel to fall one day called pride. Anytime that I start promoting myself and thinking that you're probably interested in what I'm doing right now, there's a vanity that is unfortunate. Romans 12:3 counsels us to not think too highly of ourselves, but think soberly according to the grace that God gives every man. A little while ago, there was a young couple in our churches, and we do have a church standard in our churches against social networking. We do give room for some private things like a WhatsApp group or I think there's another one called Path that some people use, and that is more of a closed network, but even that can be abused. But there was a young couple that moved on, and about a year later, one of the ministry said that you ought to take a look at their Twitter account. He said, it'll surprise you. And so I went online and Googled it, and it came up. And it was somewhere between silly and embarrassing, because where I was looking, the couple had gotten up on Sunday morning, and so Twitter is these one line sentences. So the first one was, "Got up this morning, beautiful day." The next one was, "Heading to church, it's nice." The third one was, "Church is done, great service." The fourth one was, "Had a good lunch." And I'm thinking to myself, that's weird. After a while, since I preached this message, my daughter found a T-shirt, it was. And she said, "You ought to see this, Dad." And this is what it said. It says, "I don't have a Facebook or Twitter account, so I just go around announcing out loud what I'm doing at random times. I've got 3 followers so far, but I think 2 of them are police." Now, that's funny. But it's only funny because you never heard of somebody doing that in real life. Can you imagine Jesus going to Nazareth, healed 2 blind men? Great, good job, Jesus. Thumbs come up. All. It sounds appalling to have that much vanity that I would think that I need to blast, you know, what I had for lunch in 1 hour increments. That is just indicative of any old Twitter account. That's what the majority of them are. There are some business ones. There are some event-driven ones that, you know, these one-sentence things might have more place. But this whole idea, the problem with that is that somebody thought that somebody cared about me. And you probably want to know what I'm up to. And it's all twisted. It's backwards from Romans 15. And so I talk about the danger of egoism and narcissism. It doesn't mean that every Twitter person does it. It just means that some do it and you ought to think about it. It's dangerous. Number 5 is the danger of wasted time. In South Korea, there is an actual case of a home where the children starved to death because of the parents' addiction to online time, mostly social networking. Now, that's acute, and I don't expect that to happen near every time. But I have seen children starved of other things with technology. I've seen people starve visible family relations for online ones. In our own churches, we had a situation where we had to go to a home and confront them because in real life, the duties of home were getting neglected. The wash was not getting done. Meals were not getting made. The dishes weren't getting washed because the mom was spending hours on this. It's not fun even going and talking about those things. Because you would think that logically, with the Spirit of God in us, there would be some other controls. But in that case, they weren't, and help was needed. And I don't need to tell you that in that home, those children, well, we'll just say that discipline is not ideal. It's just because all that parenting is going up in smoke, burned on another idol, another altar. And it's a danger you have to be careful about. Well, I do want to close with a couple positive thoughts. I've told you about a lot of negative things. But rather than telling you what can be good about online or social networking, I would just like to step back a little bit. And we're going to develop this thought a lot further tomorrow morning. But just ask yourself the question of whether you would rather have brotherhood or whether you would rather have networking. I have a book that I picked up, and it's interesting because it looks in depth very much at what social media is. It's called The Church of Facebook. And the writer is exploring all the different components of how this is changing our culture, and is it good or bad, and can the church survive in the midst of it? Now, this is written from a very secular Protestant perspective, and so it is not what I would consider 100% sound, but it is intriguing to listen to the thoughts of somebody that is grappling with what the Bible teaches, what they see developing in modern age, and whether it can be brought together in something that glorifies God. But near the end of that book, there's 4 bloggers that get into this debate of what constitutes authentic community. And I think as I looked at that discussion, you could actually use a synonym of brotherhood and not do any injustice to the conversation. And one of the bloggers is actually a Mennonite preacher from Phoenix, Arizona, but I'm sure it's a very liberal pastor because a liberal church because of what he's involved in and other things in his life. But he gives four components, that, and they argue this out and finally agree that, and I'm going to write them up here and we'll let them there till tomorrow morning, and we'll pick up this idea of what of brotherhood, and you can look at it. But they agree that there's four components to authentic community or brotherhood. Number one is shared history. In other words, you have something authentic when you have moments and events that the group, whatever it is, shares together. Number two is permanence. And permanence, okay, there's some history that people have together that it's just one event. Permanence is when you do it all the time and you have a whole history together. You know, for 15 years I've come here to Pine Grove for church, and you have permanence because you're just part of the 15-year history, shared history. Number three is proximity. One of the things we have to learn in modern America, modern life, is that just because the highways will get us there fast enough, you can't have churches spread all over Washington, one congregation. You'll never have congregational life. And if you haven't figured that out yet, just go home and think about it. Number four is shared vision. And these four bloggers agree that while you can have online community, you can never have authentic online community. And the problem is that it is just about impossible to have shared history unless you do it online, which isn't much. Remember when we all got the same email. Okay, permanence. We've been blogging together for 4 years. Proximity, well, he's in Hong Kong and I'm here. Shared vision is really where social networking is pulls people together. That is where you sit down and I think out loud and you respond and we respond, and to really pull people together in a tight group, it is done around this concept of the future. What the present is, how we can make it different for the future. Now, I think brotherhood is a far superlative to something online when you put those four together. And we'll talk about that this tomorrow morning. But there's one more thing that I came across in my studies that just fascinated me, and I've been watching for it and doing more research, trying to learn more about it. But there's a story that goes like this. How many of you ever heard of Gore-Tex clothing? Waterproof. Ah, I thought you did. The man that invented that, the man that started that, his name was Bill Gore. One day, Bill Gore walks out into his plant, and he is surprised and then disappointed to realize that he doesn't even know everybody that works for him. And he goes back to his office, and he's sitting there thinking about, when did this happen? Well, how did I go from a couple employees in a little clothing store to this big factory that I don't even know? Where did it happen? And he turned it over for a while, and he thought it happened about the time that the plant hit about 150 people. At that point, he had close to 300, is what the article says. Well, he didn't do much more with that, except that one day his friend, Roger Dunbar, came to visit him. And Roger Dunbar is a British sociologist. He's from Great Britain, but these men are friends. I don't know if it started online or not, but they're talking about this. And he's telling Mr. Dunbar how that he's disappointed, and he's about ready to spin off some of his whole business and get it down to where he knows everybody that works for him again, because he liked that better. And Roger says, you know what, I want to go home and think about that, because you might have discovered something that we all knew all along and never really paid any attention to it. So Mr. Dunbar goes home. Now, this is 1992, and he's been researching this ever since. And he has come to the very sound, in his mind, an astute conclusion that when we try to push our personal world bigger than 150 people, it spins out every time. And he's been researching this, and he's been putting it forward, and it's become such a popular and talked about concept that you can go in the world of psychology and sociology and just different areas. And if you say Dunbar's number, somebody will say 150.
Now, he's researched this to the point that he's even interviewed the Amish and the Hutterites, and he discovers that the Amish typically divide their districts when they hit about 150 people. That's what he claims. This man from Great Britain came over and checked it out. He goes up to the Hutterite communities, and that's about when they divide. This is what he says. But it's his position that socially, some of us are better than others, but not that much. Maybe you can do 200. Maybe you can do only 100. And a couple of us struggle to remember 50 names. But this is talking about people that you know, you interact with, then when you catch up, they know how many children you have, they know what age they are, which one of them has their driver's license. It's about 150. That's all it is. Now, what are you going to do with a world where you can build a social media platform and have 3,000 followers? If Mr. Dunbar knows what he's talking about, what are you going to have if you build a world with 3,000 followers? Well, you're going to have 2,850 that don't mean a thing. That's what it is. And I've been watching for his articles and reading them, and I ran across something really interesting, and that is that people were pressing Mr. Dunbar if maybe the truth is that since we come from monkeys and we've always adapted to our environment, that maybe if we raise a whole generation on Facebook, we'll be able to do things different in the next generation. And he said he thinks that's right. He thinks that once you have an entire generation raised on Facebook, you'll be able to interact with 3,000 people and have meaningful relationships. I can tell some of you aren't buying it. Well, shall we wait and see? It's one of the reasons why your churches shouldn't be any bigger than 150. You won't know the people. And this is so fascinating to me because I even watch it in Mennonite communities. And I find that when you get about that size, you start hearing people talk about cliques. And all they're doing is they're rebuilding a circle inside the circle. And it happens. I talked to a man once. He was part of a congregation that had 1,500 members. And I said, "Do you know my neighbor?" He goes there. And he said, "No, I don't know near everybody." I said, "So how do you have church?" And he said, "Well, we have small groups. We meet in groups of 75 during the week, and that's really our church." And he said, "Sunday is just a place where you go to listen to the pastor and to get inspired, but church is in small group." So they're back to Dunbar's number again. They chop the whole thing down to something they can manage, something they can interact with.